This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about mental health education, in particular that which we've been campaigning for that went live across England and Wales on the 1st of September. The interview you'll be hearing today was actually also recorded on that day. So that was just a really exciting way to mark the moment with something that we've been working towards for so long and then kind of crept up on us. You know, we've got so used to like our strange lives in lockdown in some ways, and in other ways it still makes us feel quite disconnected. So we weren't able to celebrate this incredible progress as we normally would, but it was so nice to get to do this episode and really dig into the specifics of what these educational reforms mean with a guest who is an expert in teaching, both by profession and also in the work that she does now. So to start off, we'll just set the scene a little bit if you are newer to the podcast. We've been campaigning for mental health education across the whole of the UK for a few years now. Of course, this is not a new concept, but it's one that's been so needed. And so we've been so delighted to lead the progress made in the last few years. And a lot of that comes down to the support we've had from our listeners and the public more generally, including our petition, which has just passed 200,000 signatures.
Yay!
So first off, we just wanted to say a huge thank you to all of you who have supported this cause. It's so vital. And I think you'll hear in the interview a kind of reminder of how obvious the need is. You know, even me working so hard on this, when I was sat there and reading through what this new education includes, I couldn't help but just be reminded how that this has to be in place. Although I will also mention, this isn't an entire victory in that although this covers schools across England and Wales, we are campaigning for the whole of the UK. So work continues, and of course passing 200,000 signatures is a great way for me to go back to those MPs and political leaders that have supported the cause in the past and now say, look, this is already progress. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
Literally, and particularly with Nicola Sturgeon, given that she's actually given us a statement of support for it previously, I think it'll hold great weight to be able to go to her and say, hi, Nicola, Boris is, well, I'm not going to say, not Boris exactly, Boris's government have implemented this. What are you going to do about it? Although I should say, in fairness to the Scottish Parliament, they are doing really well in terms of increasing counselling within schools, which is an area that in England is still a bit more underrepresented in reforms than we would like. So that's still something that's ongoing as well. Wales are brilliant on that. They had a whole programme even before the mental health education work around counselling in schools. So Scotland seemed to be doing it similarly that way round.
How amazing that it's come at this time. Bobby, literally, we went back to school on the 2nd of September after being off for nearly 6 months due to COVID-19. And on the day the kids went back was the day that this was launched in schools, even though the work's been done beforehand. What a better time for it to get the publicity that it deserves and, you know, for the work to be carried out.
Yeah, I think it's really helped, and it will definitely make the lives of the teachers delivering it easier, because part of it is having consultations with parents. So that's something that already was going on in terms of sex education, you know, introducing parents each year to the curriculum that would be taught. This similarly will have a kind of once-off consultation with parents to show these are the changes, this is what your kids will be learning about, here's how you can support them and us in delivering it. And so in many ways, I can see them being less issues with that than ever, because it's so obvious that mental health support is needed, particularly at the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's a really good point, Bobby, because the fact that it will be delivered within the PSHE programmes, isn't it, which is the personal and the social health education in schools, will be and what's gone on in the last 6 months will really give it the support that it needs, because I was in a parent consultation, as I'm a mum to my two girls in year five and year two last year, actually, about covered a lot of the work that's going to be going on in quite briefly, but it did talk about sex education more specifically at that point. And there were quite a few parents that had quite a lot to say negatively about it, and people weren't sure, and people are a bit untrusting of school. And I guess I want to urge listeners to, you know, who are parents, to be kind of open to what school's trying to bring and trust that they're going to be appropriate, even when it comes to the mental health, and hope that may be a bit easier potentially.
I do get it. You know, it's big changes, and that is going to take a bit of getting used to. But if you are concerned about it and you're listening, you're in the right place, because in the interview we'll go into great depth about what this education includes and what it doesn't. And you've also reminded me of something that's been kind of funny about the timing, in that a lot of people have assumed that there is a connection between COVID and it being launched now, particularly online. I've been getting a lot of questions about that. And it's sort of like, part of me is like, I'm so glad that everyone sees the link and sees why it's so important. But then another part of me is like, we've been working at this for a long time. And not just us, you know, support from charities and other campaigners. So part of me is like, no, this has been important forever, really. It's just finally now being recognised. And someone just retweeted my post on Twitter about it. That notification just came up. Look at us. The campaign is so live. It's happening even when I should have turned notifications off. And then the other thing you mentioned, which I love, is talking about support for teachers. This is something, again, we'll talk about with Louise Newby, today's guest. I would like there to be more. So we'll continue pushing for that in the new education. And behind the scenes, I'm also working on a few things to potentially supplement that as well. So yeah, I think that's all I have to say on that. But overall, we're just super excited. You can read more details at the petition, bit.ly/mentalpetition. Anything else to say, Danielle?
No, just that I love the fact that we're given the opportunity to be proactive in mental health. And, you know, teachers may have had a few resources available to help kids that were struggling in school, but actually they're raising awareness to everybody, regardless of your mental health state. The fact that we've got this space for teachers and the room within their day-to-day hours at work and within the curriculum to now talk about this, overwhelming. I'm really proud of the podcast, really proud of you, Bob, for all the work that you've done. You know, it's been brilliant. And like you said at the top, thanks to all the listeners that have signed up as a petition, and anyone else that might not be a listener that signed up as a petition, we're really grateful. So keep up the good work.
Yeah. 100%. So we're so excited. You know, and on a personal level, you know, it can feel strange to talk about, because of course the broader issue here is support for young people, and it is the right thing to do to have these kind of educational reforms. But on a personal level as well, you know, I do think back to my own schooling experience and the schooling experience of friends of mine, many of whom really struggled, and just thinking of how much will change. I don't know how I'll ever wrap my head around it. I mean, even the petition alone, in addition to the signatures, there's about 45,000 comments of support.
Wow.
How many rooms could you wallpaper with that many comments of support? And it's brilliant to be joined by Louise Newby today, who has a background in teaching and just being generally an all-round incredible academic, and now works in consultancy and training delivered in schools and other environments related to mental health. So she's a really good 360 expert on the impact of this. And we had a really lovely, warm conversation whilst also going through, you know, the technicals of what's involved as well. So with that all said, we'll get into the episode in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
My name's Louise Newby, and I'm a mental health trainer. I work for a company called 3X. Previously, I worked as a teacher, and I specialise in providing mental health training to teachers and other business professionals. My earliest memory of a mental health issue actually goes back to when I was at school, when I was about 12. I can vividly remember my science teacher, who, as I understand it now, was having a mental breakdown. We didn't know as children what it was he was going through. We just knew that there was something odd about this teacher. We didn't quite understand why he had to keep leaving our classroom, why he became quite distressed in our lessons. I can remember, 12 years old, I can remember people finding it quite funny. People used to take the mick out of him. That teacher's career ended quite soon after we witnessed some of his more difficult times in the classroom. And I still see that teacher now. I live in the same town that I grew up in, and I see him walking about, and I often look at him and think, that was 30 years ago. What support was there for you 30 years ago when you were suffering that mental breakdown at school? And what did our class do to you? You know, how did we make the situation worse for you? And I hope that the staff at that school supported him and that he didn't leave teaching in a sad way, but I suspect he probably did.
Wow, that's really powerful and links perfectly to what we're talking about today, the importance of mental health education, but that extending to supporting teachers as much as students. And often I'm asked about the wider impact I expect this to have, and that's a big part of it. That one of the criticisms that sometimes comes of mental health education is, what about the people that are already adults, not just teachers, but the wider community? But actually, what I've seen in the research that's carried out on this and the trials that have happened is that by raising children with a certain level of understanding, they will more appropriately react to mental ill health in others. So I can certainly see your concerns with that teacher, and I'm pleased to say that, you know, today we're very much making progress to a better environment for all. Do you remember at the time what kind of things you were witnessing in terms of the behaviour?
Yeah, so he would be very quiet in some lessons. He would spend most of his time not really engaging with us at all. And I guess that was times when he was, looking back on it now, he was depressed in those times. He didn't speak much during the lesson. He was very kind of withdrawn. Other lessons we would go to, and he was quite manic, really, almost be running around the classroom and shouting at people and getting angry with them for small things, and then running out of the classroom because it was a science classroom. He could run into the prep room and he would run off and we wouldn't see him for 10 minutes. And then, you know, he would reappear and be slamming things down on the tables and quite agitated. And we didn't understand that. And it seems very cruel now, looking back, that he was going through that and was having to live that in front of a class of 30, 12-year-old children, probably one of the worst age groups that you could be in front of at that time in your life.
Yeah, for sure. It's an intense, quite hormonal age group. But also, you know, it's understandable that you guys didn't see what was going on and didn't know how to respond to that, right? And we see that even with adults, that they can react very inappropriately around mental health. Obviously, mental health stigma is so much about what our show's about. But then I don't believe people are entirely to blame when a lot of the education hasn't been there historically.
Yeah, that's right. And when the stigma is so enormous in so many different workplaces, and people are so frightened to talk about it, which they shouldn't be. I often think about if a colleague was to walk in and tell you that they'd had a cancer diagnosis, how different the reaction in a staff room would be to someone walking in and saying, you know what, I'm struggling with my mental health. And it shouldn't be like that. We should treat people the same, whether it's a physical or a mental health condition. And hopefully that is beginning to change. But the education needs to be there so that more people feel comfortable to say that.
Yeah, absolutely. An example I'm often reminded of from my time at school is whenever anyone would come in with a cast, if they'd broken their arm, and people will quite literally run to go sign their cast, and how incredible it would be to get to a place where mental health is treated in that way, that people just rally round you automatically. And so what did you see in terms of your own time teaching as the education for students and for teachers?
Basically non-existent, which is why I'm in the role that I'm in now. So I worked in the pharmaceutical industry before I became a teacher. I was somebody who'd always wanted to be a teacher. but was put off teaching by my own teachers, who said to me, no, don't be a teacher. You know, you can earn a lot more money and be a lot happier doing something else. So I did what they said, went off and worked in the pharmaceutical industry, loved my job. It was a really high pressure job, but still had a yearning to become a teacher. So retrained and I worked as a science teacher in secondary schools and became head of department. When I was quite new at being head of department, one of the members of staff within the department began to suffer from depression. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether I should start a conversation with her, whether I should wait for her to come to me. It was becoming more apparent by the week that her condition was becoming more and more serious and it was beginning to affect her work. But because of that stigma and because of, I guess, an embarrassment on my part, I didn't know how to approach the conversation. I was quite a bit younger than her. Eventually, I had to have a conversation with her and I hadn't had any training. I didn't know whether what I was saying was the right thing to say or whether what I said to her, although I thought it was supportive and kind, whether she was going to go home that night and feel even worse because maybe I'd said the wrong thing. And I was really worried by that situation. I went to the deputy head at the school and spoke to them. They hadn't had any training either. They asked me what I'd said and basically the conversation was along the lines of, have you seen your GP? Is there any other support there for you? And I was told that I'd said the right thing and we should all just carry on and make sure that her classes were okay. And I left that school soon afterwards when I went off on maternity leave and I worried about that woman when I was off because I didn't know whether I had helped her or not helped her. And that stayed with me for a long time. I then eventually left the classroom because I was asked to train trainee teachers. And I was really concerned by the number of trainee teachers who were arriving on the teacher training course with pre-existing mental health conditions. And again, I'd had no training. I was just referring them to university counselling services. And I felt I was shortchanging them by doing that. I should have had some basic training so I could hold basic conversations with them that were helpful, that weren't just, I can't deal with this, off you go to counselling, where they waited and waited for an appointment. And so it was those two experiences that worried me and made me think we need to do something else here. We need to be supporting our teachers much more effectively and with much better education of teaching professionals so that we can support and help each other during times when we're struggling and finding things difficult.
Absolutely. I can really see your concern there and how worried you were by those situations. I think all of us can feel that and it's incredibly uncomfortable. And so then potentially the temptation is you just avoid mental health conversations altogether. And it almost sounds a bit like that's what you experienced with the deputy head, that they thought, okay, your conversation sounds good enough, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's something that you see as part of the stigma as well around mental health education. There is this fear from some people, it's like it's contagious, that if we talk about it, then the kids will start catching it. And of course, we know from the science that isn't how it works, but that's also why the education is so important.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely right. I agree. And I think that people are scared to talk. And I think that there is a big fear around, like you say, this contagiousness of mental health issues, that if you start opening the can, then the worms are going to scatter everywhere and suddenly everybody will have a mental health issue.
Yeah. And that also ignores how prevalent mental health issues are in general. One of the stats we've used on the petition is that by the age of 18, 75% of those who develop mental ill health have developed it already by that stage. And that's staggering and so worrying. And even as someone that's put so much work into that, still that stat can be a little bit difficult to wrap my head around because there is such a culture of silence in education, but also in general.
Yeah, that's right. And then in terms of teachers, the stats are really quite scary when you look at them. The HSE did a study and they found that teaching staff and education professionals have got the highest rates of stress and anxiety of all of the jobs that you can do in Britain. You know, these people are so important to the future of our children, the future jobs that they go on to do. And if we're educating our children with people who are finding their own jobs really, really stressful and are suffering really high levels of anxiety, what are we teaching our children? We really need to be looking at how we can support teachers to make sure that they can then support children as they develop mental health conditions throughout their childhood.
Absolutely. And the thing that really worries me about that is, because teachers are such role models for young people, what kind of template is that setting up? That you go into work and you struggle and you're always stressed and you don't get enough support? Because that is the reality for teachers in their jobs at the moment. And yet oftentimes these are the only adults they're regularly seeing in their workplace, right? They don't see their parents at work, they don't see their family, and they only come across other adults in workplaces like shops briefly. So what a template to see. And it also is a profession where there's so much work you do outside of the classroom as well. So the idea of things like unpaid overtime, which are such a taboo in some industries, in teaching seem incredibly normalised. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And in some schools, not all schools, but in some schools, you know, there's a badge of honour being the first one in and the last one to leave and all the work that you're doing over the weekend. I follow a lot of the social media sites for teachers, and that adds a whole new pressure, I think, particularly to new young teachers for whom social media is a really big part of their life. So it is natural for them to then want to join social media groups, meet other new teachers. Watching those groups over the summer holidays this year, I was really concerned by the pressure to go into school and make your classroom beautiful. It was like watching interior design TV shows for classrooms, and really competitive photos of reading corners and display boards. I'm not saying that that's wrong. I think it's great that young teachers are so enthusiastic and they want to make a wonderful environment for the children that they're going to nurture and care for who are arriving in September, and that's lovely. But if you are feeling slightly inadequate, you're feeling slightly nervous, you're not sure that you're good enough, and you've got imposter syndrome, I've seen that term flying around a lot in social media and forums this summer between teachers. Mm-hmm. See a beautiful classroom that someone else has done loads up an incredible amount of pressure on young novice shoulders before you've even begun your teaching career. Some advice to new teachers would be to take real care of yourself in those social environments and not to feel a pressure. And you know that what you're doing is great, and to focus on you and your classroom and not to worry about what's going on in a city 200 miles away that you're never going to visit.
Yeah, for sure. And absolutely, I agree. It's great to see that passion and that enthusiasm, particularly from new teachers. But that's where so often burnout can come in. If that goes unchecked and the work is piling on and they're doing more and more hours, particularly, like you say, in environments where so often the answer to any issue is more work, right? That's something that seems to be in most workplaces an element of that. But I think particularly teaching has a lot of it. And also there's an irony in it when you think of the children, and teachers know how much social media can affect the mental health of their students, and this kind of competitive comparison that goes on, and yet they may be going back home and doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely, that's right. Or a negative comment. So there was a big thing this summer around setting up classrooms for the new bubbles that are going to be necessary this year. Mm-hmm. And that means in an ideal situation, you will have all children facing in the same direction. They'll all be facing forwards. Now, if you've got circular tables in your classroom, it's very difficult to have all the children facing forwards. So some people were posting photos of their classrooms with circular tables, and immediately really nasty comments from some teachers about that, and saying, well, you're going against the guidance and making people feel they've done something really wrong before they've even stepped foot in their first ever classroom. So I think there is a need to remember kindness to other teaching professionals, that it's a really difficult job. It's really full on. And if we can all be kind to each other, I think that's a really good first step for helping people feel supported rather than criticising people at the first opportunity.
Right, for sure. And I think actually, in a way, although this isn't the primary focus for it, a lot of the new mental health education will actually be a reminder to certain teachers, maybe those that have been, you know, in the profession a long time and might be somewhat jaded by how difficult it is. This can be a reminder of a lot of the actually quite simple things that can improve your mental health that they'll be getting training for in order to deliver that then to students.
Yeah, that's right. And helping people to understand simple things that they can do to help them. But I think also making sure that that message is coming from the top. We're quite scared sometimes of talking about a top-down culture. But I think with mental health, it really has to be a top-down culture, because if your head teacher and the governors in your school are not supportive of mental health being a priority, it's not going to be a priority. And that's a really important thing for helping everybody in the school to feel that this is fine, we can talk about this, it's not a taboo subject. All of us are existing on the mental health continuum. We'll all have our ups and downs in life. When we have a down, everyone else is there to support us and help us to carry on working, because we know that good work is good for our mental health. It doesn't mean that because you're having a difficult time, you're going to be booted out of the door and a supply teacher brought in. And I think that's probably the fear for a lot of people.
Yeah, I can really see that. And I love that phrase, mental health continuum. It sounds suitably sci-fi. I love it. You've also reminded me of an example externally to this as well, which is in my work with the campaign Time to Change, run by the charities Mind and Rethink Mental Illness. They have an employer's pledge as part of that. So they get organisations to sign up to be more supportive of employee mental health. And they found that the biggest determining factor in that succeeding and actually making real change in a workplace is exactly what you say, is senior management buy-in. So unless the people at the very top are committed and genuinely understand what the changes are and why they're important, it's such an uphill battle for any other level of the organisation to try and make real change.
Exactly. And it's not enough for those senior leaders to say, hey, we've signed up this mental health charter or whatever it is for the school. They then have to live that, and it needs to be a key part of their communication strategy all of the time. It needs to be something that's mentioned in department meetings. It needs to be mentioned in whole staff briefings. It needs to be up on notice boards. It needs to be discussed at parents' meetings when they're coming in for different things. It almost needs to be diarised so that leaders are reminded continuously of the need to talk about it throughout the year, and it becomes a natural part of that school. And the more natural talking about wellbeing becomes, the more the children will see that, and the easier it will be for everybody, and that stigma can disappear.
Yeah, I totally agree, absolutely. And that's why, for me personally, it was so vital that this is compulsory education, right? Because there was actually a predecessor to this. You could have an optional module about mental health as part of PSHE lessons. So what a lot of people will be familiar with as the time in school where they learnt about sex ed, or I'm trying to think what else was taught.
A little bit of money, a little bit of financial well-being. I think there was, wasn't there? A little bit of financial awareness.
Yeah, a little bit of financial awareness, or what's appropriate. Certainly when I was going through school, they were just starting to put in more education around using the internet safely as well. So previously there was an option of a mental health course to teach as part of that, but it was very limited and it was optional. And so it was so often then the schools that were already proactive in that area were the only ones teaching it, right? And so then you have this inequality of, we already see such inequality between different schools, or whether they're maybe private or state. And then you've also got an additional inequality in terms of mental health. And what we know from the statistics is that so often certain mental health issues disproportionately affect people from certain backgrounds. So then if they've got that going on, and they're also the same people that might be unlikely to be educated on how to cope with this, then the gap just becomes so wide. I'm so delighted, actually, the listeners won't know that we've rescheduled this conversation, but it's worked out really well because we're talking on the day the new curriculum goes live. So the reformed education that will replace that is relationship, sex and health education, all rolled in mostly as one. And then there'll be different elements to the curriculum based on primary or secondary school. I'd be interested to hear your perspective on how far this will go. So specifically on the mental wellbeing part of this, the Department of Education, so this is for England specifically, but the Welsh education is quite similar. They've stated that pupils should know at the end of their primary schooling that mental wellbeing is a normal part of life in the same way as physical health. that there is a normal range of emotions, e.g. happiness, sadness, anger, fear, how to recognise and talk about their emotions, including having a varied vocabulary of words to use when talking about their own feelings or those of others, how to judge whether what they are feeling and how they are behaving is appropriate and proportionate, the benefits of physical exercise, time outdoors, community participation on mental well-being and happiness, simple self-care techniques, including the importance of rest, time spent with friends, family, and the benefits of hobbies and interests, isolation and loneliness, and why it is important for children to discuss their feelings with an adult and seek support. That one I feel is extra important at the moment with us still being in relative forms of lockdown. That bullying, including cyberbullying, has a negative and often lasting impact on mental well-being. Where and how to seek support, including whom in school they can speak to if they are worried about their own or someone else's mental well-being, including issues arising online. And then lastly, it is common for people to experience mental ill health. For many people who do, the problems can be resolved if the right support is made available, especially if accessed early enough. So I really like that last one that kind of wraps it up and why it's so important that this education is delivered from a young age.
Yeah, exactly. And that last point, that there is help available and there are things that you can do to improve your mental health. And I think drumming that home from a very early age, you know, I feel excited listening to that curriculum and thinking about 6 and 7 year old children beginning to understand those kind of things and how wonderful it will be for that cohort of children as they go through life that they've had that message from that age. That's going to break down barriers, isn't it? And it's really going to knock down stigma as well if we can get those children from that young age to know there is physical health and there's mental health. And the two, you know, go hand in hand, they're side by side. One is not worse or better than the other. And we need to look after both of those things. And then moving on to thinking about emotions and understanding emotions, which is something that I think we just expect children to understand, but for a lot of children it's really difficult. My son is autistic, and so we have to spend a lot of time with him helping him to understand how to express his emotions so that we can understand what he means. We have a lot of, you know, very physical violent meltdowns from him, and that's just his way of saying, actually, I can't cope with this, I don't know how to deal with this, and I don't know how I should show this emotion. But it isn't just autistic children who find that difficult. Lots of children find that difficult, and giving them the words and the skills to be able to express how they're feeling is a really important thing for our children to feel comfortable doing from a really, really early age. Just equipping them with those skills, if it's delivered by teachers who have been trained to deliver it and who feel comfortable and confident with the content, I think it's a really exciting curriculum that will really help those children to thrive throughout their lives. I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it is so exciting. It's also something that when you read it through like that, it's kind of a bit baffling how much of this was missing. That so often I talk about mental health education to people, and understandably, a lot of the time people aren't sure exactly what that means or what that includes. And then when I list elements like this, they're like, oh, of course. What? Kids weren't being taught that?
Yeah, exactly.
But you're right, it's so important. And I can't help but relate it back to my own school experience and dealing with depression throughout my schooling. And I thought it was loneliness. I thought I had really intense, crippling loneliness because no one had had that conversation with me. Nobody had talked to me about different types of emotions. And mental health wasn't even mentioned once through my entire schooling experience. And yet mental ill health was a huge part of why school was difficult for me. You know, it's just baffling to look back on. And no wonder young people feel stigma, because the thing that baffled me, I think, even at the time, was mental health wasn't talked about, but sex was. Like, my teacher would talk to me about condoms, but not about it being okay for boys to be upset or something, you know, that seems so innocuous.
And that's all sending messages to children that you mustn't talk about this, that we are still living 100 years ago and we don't talk about mental health because we've all got a stiff upper lip and we carry on. And times have changed and we have so much better understanding now. And you think about the different experience you could have had at school if somebody had recognised what you were going through. Hopefully with this curriculum, there won't be children who will experience what you did, because people will be looking out for it and people will know it's okay to talk about it and they won't be scared.
Absolutely. I mean, I have no doubt that I would have got support sooner. I didn't get support and my initial diagnosis until after school. And I think there's no coincidence there. And something that I'm often asked about is, you know, the impact more broadly, right? So that even with the proportion of young people that experience mental ill health, which unfortunately is on the rise, it's beyond them, because a child struggling, or like you talked about with a teacher struggling, has such an impact. And so everyone having more understanding is important. And so much of this education is just generally good life advice. Physical health being good for your mind as well as your body. Simple self-care techniques. It's something that I really pushed for. And I actually wasn't sure the government was going to take up, because I thought they might think, let's focus more on the science side, right? That we see that with sex education, that there's a very scientific element to it. And it's, you know, their anatomy and how babies are made and how to be safe of STDs. And that stuff is all very important. But what's often missed is all the emotions that go with that.
Yeah, it's opening up perhaps conversations that they don't feel confident having. So let's keep it factual, fact-based, and let's not blur any boundaries in what we're talking about, because then we might start talking about things that we don't really want to talk about. But that's not real life, and real life is nuanced, and there are lots of different experiences that people are going to have. And the more we can give people the tools and the confidence to talk about those things, the happier lives they will have, because they won't be bottling things up, which is one of the huge issues in Britain.
Yeah, everyone gets tired with it. There's the keep calm, carry on. There's the man up culture. And I don't know about you, but it's funny kind of thinking about it that actually, even with the sexual education side of it, it was the angsty teen crushes were the thing that was affecting my mental health.
Yeah, the emotional side of things, because that's so complicated. And the messaging that our children get nowadays about emotions and the things that they see, and they don't have the escape that children of my generation, not your generation, Poppy, actually, we did our phones, so we could, when we went home, we went home, and that was our family time, and we shut the front door and we got to escape from all of the stuff that was going on. Nowadays those children are bombarded continuously and they get home and they don't have that escape, and we have to therefore provide them with so many more skills than any other generation have needed before, because they don't get any respite unless they are very self-controlled. And, you know, it's going back to the social media thing we were talking about with teachers, isn't it? You know, you spend your summer holiday in chat rooms with other teachers. Actually, you need to have the self-discipline to say, I might look at this on a Monday, Wednesday and a Friday for an hour. The rest of the time, I'm not thinking about that. And it's giving children those skills as well, because the accessibility of their friends to them is there all the time, and if they don't do that, it very quickly becomes overwhelming.
For sure. And it's incredible how fast things have developed, right? Because that's a main worry of mine in terms of how bullying can follow you home via the internet so easily nowadays. And I remember when Facebook was new and it came to my friend group, and I played a lot of Farmville and I sent people virtual sheep, and like the contrast between that and the, like, the Instagram filtered, constantly online world that young people exist in today really worries me. I think in a way I was kind of one of the last year groups to really have that contrast of what's real life communication and what's kind of digitally augmented.
Exactly. And it's an overwhelming world, I think, now, if we don't give children skills to be able to distinguish between what's real and what's not, and when you need to be online and when it's okay to switch off and just be in your house, having a break from all of that, which is why mental health education is even more important, isn't it? Because the mental overload is far greater than it's been for any generation before.
Yeah, we did an episode only recently on burnout and looking particularly at how it's affecting millennials disproportionately. And a lot of that is that internet element and expectations on our work lives that make a work-life balance very difficult now. That for so many people, unwinding is spending time on social media. And I'm not really sure that is unwinding for a lot of us.
No.
So I'm really glad that those elements are being included. And then this has developed further for secondary schools. So I've got the bullet points for what should be learnt by the end of secondary school under these new reforms. Pupils should know how to talk about their emotions accurately and sensitively using appropriate vocabulary, that happiness is linked to being connected to others, how to recognise the early signs of mental wellbeing concerns, common types of mental ill health, e.g. anxiety and depression, how to critically evaluate when something they do or are involved in has a positive or negative effect on their own or others' mental health, the benefits and importance of physical exercise, time outdoors, community participation, volunteering and service-based activities on mental wellbeing and happiness.
Yeah, and what I like about that is the link to not only understanding your own mental health, but recognising signs of poor mental health in others. And, you know, from the ages of 11 upwards, when this is going to be taught, you know, you need your friends looking out for you. And I'm sure from the experience that you've talked about, had your friends had an awareness of mental ill health, they might have understood what you were going through a bit better. And maybe it would have been them who would have raised a flag and said, you know, there's something not right here. Is it what we've been learning about? I like the fact that it's looking out for each other and hopefully creating care and support between teenagers for those who've got mental health issues.
Definitely. I really hope that becomes a template that they then carry to the workplace. And this is why it's so important that this, if taught correctly, and, you know, I'm really pleased with how it's been drawn up, then we'll see that just be carried through someone's entire life. And one thing I personally really pushed for was in terms of the language. We talk about appropriate mental health language a lot. And so in the initial draft of this education that I had to give feedback on, the terms mental health or mental illness weren't actually mentioned. Every time it was just mental well-being as perhaps a safer seeming term. That it is a very broad term and it can include potentially even more than the term mental health can. But I argued that what was really vital is that young people are equipped with the most accurate language, that they need to be able to go to the GP and say, I'm having, you know, this symptom. This is what I'm experiencing, not say, I've got a lot of mental well-being. You know, they've got to actually have the correct language. Otherwise, they are going to struggle getting the support. They're going to struggle, even if they're Googling for certain resources. It's just so vital and so important to the stigma that we see it all the time, where particularly mental illness is a term that people avoid, but often that is the most accurate one and so should be used.
Yeah, we all know, you know, you hear all the time doctors pleading with parents, please teach your children the correct terminology for their body parts. Mm-hmm. And that's so important for your physical health. So using the right language for mental health is exactly the same. If we're going to have parity between physical and mental health, we need to, as you say, equip people with the right language. And I think alongside that is the right kind of language when we're talking about mental health within schools as well. So talking about providing positive support to people because they can get better. And this is a normal part of life, and not making people who are suffering from mental health, ill health think that they're somehow different to other people. That was one of the things I really noticed with the trainee teachers that I was teaching, that there were people who were arriving with poor mental health. There were other people who started to struggle within the course because of the pressures of doing a PGCE. And anyone listening to this who's done a PGCE will know that, you know, it's one of the most difficult years of your life. And you can come into it, you know, feeling like somebody who would never suffer from anxiety or stress. Actually doing a PGCE will probably create stress in the majority of people who do one. But talking positively about, I can feel this feeling, and I know steps that I can use to help myself get through this, and there can be a positive outcome. And I think it's making sure that people know that, but it doesn't mean that you're always going to feel like that, that we kind of live in a world where we will have pressure and that will make things difficult, but it's having the skills to help us and using the right kind of language.
Yeah, and it's so important that teachers have that kind of support as well. like we discussed before, you know, being a role model so often to students, it's vital that self-care is endorsed from them personally. You know, it's not enough to just list off this education, right? The passion has to come behind it. And I think that's a big part of why teaching is such a challenging role, because it is at its heart really quite performative. That, you know, for me, even having a podcast can be very challenging at times, but I record around my schedule or my guest schedule. We put out one episode a week. And, you know, the idea of being in front of a class day in, day out for so many hours, having to remember all this information is just something that personally I cannot relate to being able to do that, because I can find it difficult enough producing an hour of informative content just on certain weeks that are difficult, right?
Yeah, and it's an incredibly complex role. And, you know, there's a lot of teacher bashing that goes on in the press. And I quite often want some of those journalists to go on one of those TV shows where you have to try and do another job for a week. I was recalling recently how challenging it is. You want to have, and you're expected to have, meaningful contact with every child that you are teaching each day, and of course you should. You know, you want to make sure that every single child that comes into your classroom feels valued, and that you know they're there, and that you care about them being there, and you want the best from them that day. I was a secondary school teacher, and we had a 6-lesson day, and I had a tutor group, so I would have 30 children in each of those lessons and my tutor group. That meant that on a 6-lesson day with no free periods, I would be having to make meaningful contact with 210 different children during that day. And that's before you've tried to make sure you've taught them the right thing, that you've assessed them while you're teaching them to make sure they understand what you're doing, you've set their homework, you've marked their homework, you've thought about what's going to happen in the next lesson. It's an incredibly challenging job. And I think there's too much emphasis perhaps on, well, you get to finish at 3:45, you know, and you get all these lovely holidays. No, you don't. that's when you're doing your other work as well. And you almost feel that you don't have time to breathe sometimes, because that pressure is there from the minute you walk in the door, which for most teachers is probably between 7 and 7:30 in the morning. You've got to get ready for that day of lessons. And then bang, when those children arrive, you don't stop until they go. And then when they go, that's when you're going to be marking and planning, getting ready for the next day. And it's relentless. It's a relentless profession. And it's the kind of job where you're never finished. You never get to a point where you think, I'm done now. I feel I can speak with experience about this because of having had a career beforehand, which was challenging. It was stressful. But there were projects, and I finished those projects, and I got a sense of satisfaction from completing them. You don't get that with teaching. You might finish teaching a particular class, but then the next class is always coming along behind them. So it's different, I believe, to any other job, and the pressure that that brings is enormous. But countering that, there is no other job like it. It's an amazing job. It's a brilliant job. No 2 days are the same, and that's why people do it. And we need those people to do it, and we need those people to be great at doing it, because it's so important for our children that we've got great people teaching. And so we need to recognise those really specific stresses and pressures that teachers have, and support them so that they can keep doing that every day. Because to ask people to go in every day and do that when they've got challenging classes, challenging children, curriculum's constantly changing, they don't feel any autonomy.
Sorry about that.
That's a change for the better. I think everyone will be pleased with that change.
Good.
But yeah, we need to support teachers. We need to stop bashing them, and we need to be saying, you know, you're doing a great job, and it's okay to find it stressful, and these are ways that you can manage that stress.
I agree. And I guess that's a challenge we can maybe give the listeners, is to think back to your teachers. And if you can even just think of one that made a really positive impact on you, I'm sure you can think of more. You know, it's no coincidence that I've remembered the names of many of my most impactful teachers and what they taught me, even though I actually have a terrible memory normally. You know, there's not a lot of my childhood I can actually remember. But, you know, the teachers are one of the things that shines through. And particularly as someone that dealt with dyslexia through school, You know, so often it was actually the teachers in my English classes, you know, the very classes I struggled with the most are the ones where the help was just so impactful for me. And I think this will be exactly the same with mental health education. You'll always be grateful for that teacher that had the conversation you needed.
Yeah, and gave you those skills for life, because these are the kind of skills that people are going to need until they're 97, aren't they? You know, it's a lifelong skill. You might not need, even though as a science teacher, I would love everyone to be this is equation until they're 97, but actually you can probably get by all right in life not knowing the photosynthesis equation. But you need to understand your mental health for your whole life. It's fundamentally important.
I totally agree, and it's such a inspiring profession, I feel I should say. And it's possibly no surprise to the listeners that I have many teacher friends, and this is part of the reason that they're so incredible, and they actually teach me a lot even just as a friend. So it's obviously just that ingrained.
Yeah, kindred spirits.
And so I just want to quickly mention as well some other things coming in for secondary schools as well. There are additional elements to the mental health syllabus, which will include background on drugs, alcohol and tobacco. So including the dangers, the law relating to the supply and possession of illegal substances, but also the physical and psychological consequences of engaging in them, which I think is just so important. And also there's a section on prevention in terms of health, both physical and mental health, what we can do to be proactive in those areas. And then something that, again, was added a bit later on that I was really pleased to see was basic first aid training. So this won't be equivalent to a first aid qualification, but secondary school students will all be expected to learn at least the most basic elements of first aid, which is incredible to think about, given that was something that was an extra that my school brought in, and I knew how many schools didn't. So for that to be core education, of course it should be.
Yeah, and it seems absolutely daft that probably it was just the Brownies, Guides, Cubs and Scouts who could be guaranteed to have done that kind of thing, but the rest of the children in the school wouldn't. And you can't rely on it being someone who was a Brownie guide to be the person who's walking past you when you need that help and you've collapsed in the street. So, of course, everybody should have those skills. And it seems odd thinking about it that that hasn't been part of the curriculum until now.
Yeah. And I'll include some links for both we've talked mainly about the English curriculum, but also the Welsh curriculum reforms that are coming in. I'd really encourage you to take a look at them, because I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by how much is included, even beyond what we've talked about. So even in this time of COVID, it's nice that we have one silver lining, that with all that's been going on with schools, we have this definite progress that I have no doubt will positively impact every student.
And it's exciting. And I think it bodes really, really well for the future for those young people, you know, who missed out so much before. And I think hopefully it will mean that we have a much healthier population, both physically and mentally, and that stigma, as we've talked about already, will be significantly reduced, because it will just be normal. It will be a normal thing to talk about.
Yeah, it's baffling just to even try and wrap my head around it, that the mental health education I lead the campaign for is going out to millions of children right now. So, you know, from now on, I'll see a young person on the street and I'll be like, oh, I impacted you. How strange, how surreal.
But how amazing, you know, and how exciting. And yeah, it just shows what difference can be made if you fight for something, doesn't it? And you believe in something. And that's something else, you know, that is a really important thing, that despite the challenges that you've experienced, you have achieved something really quite special and quite amazing, and that's going to make a difference to all the children in the country. And that is mind-blowing.
Yeah, thank you. And it's like you've touched on a few times in terms of teaching hope, right? That there is hope for those that struggle with their mental health, that it is not a dead end, it is not some kind of doom, there is always support out there. And that's something that I had to learn for myself. So it's so incredible that I've been a part of changing that, so young people do have a different experience than I did and do get the support sooner. And even those, you know, we can't say this will be perfect. It's, you know, it's being rolled out currently. there are going to be niggles to be ironed out. There are going to be additional elements of training that are found to be needed. But, you know, it's such an incredible start. And even for those young people that may not get the support as soon as we'd like, they'll be in a more supportive environment. And I don't think that can be underestimated.
Definitely not. And you have to start somewhere. You know, you can't have a perfect situation from the beginning. That's what teaching's all about, isn't it? It's about learning and designing things to be better. So, you know, I think it sounds really comprehensive and a really exciting prospect for future children.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you so much for joining me to talk it through. If people want to find out more about your work, or maybe they're a teacher listening and they think they need some extra support in this area, could you share a bit about your work now?
Yeah, so I just came up with a few top tips that I thought teachers might find helpful for helping them in what's going to be a very different school year.
Great, thank you. And we'll include a link for those in the episode description as well. And if people want to access the work you do now and get support from 3Eggs, how would they do that?
So if they'd like to visit our website, which is 3eggs.co.uk, then you can find all of our contact information there. For schools in particular, we do a stage for mental health training. So we train people to be the mental wellbeing champion within their school. They'll meet with a group of other teachers from other schools, and they spend 2 days learning to be a mental health first aider. What we then do is we stay in contact with that group of mental health first aiders and support them. So they're not then on their own. I think mental health first aiders are trained up and then kind of thrown to the wolves and off you go. But we're there to support them, and we maintain that contact and get the cohort back together again so they can share their experiences going forward and become even better at the role that they're doing and support more people.
That's really brilliant. So thank you for that. I hope loads of people will go and take a look at your work. Also, obviously, those tips for teachers as well. And thank you again for being part of today's episode and getting to celebrate the new mental health education with me.
And just thank you to you too as well, Bobby, for the work that you've done, because to put yourself out there and do something as important as this is really impressive. My children are 8 and 10, so they're going to benefit from this. So from a very selfish point of view, I'm really grateful to you. But you know, you should be really proud of what you've achieved, because it's going to make a huge difference to the lives of all of the children in this country. So thank you.
Yeah. No, I do really appreciate that. And Danielle does a great job of reminding me to be grateful, because so often my focus is, okay, so England and Wales, now Scotland and Northern Ireland, right? Because our campaign's for the whole of the UK. But you're right, it is something I'm so proud of. And like I've mentioned, I'm still slightly getting my head around like how much is changing already. But thank you.
Yeah, that's great. And it's great to meet you and to find out about the work that you've done.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday. And remember, you are enough.